Thanks for being here.
Contact Senator Holdy.
We were just wondering. Senator Hansel, so glad you're here. Okay, good afternoon, everybody. We're going to call to order the Senate Interim Committee on Workforce, Monday, September 24th, 2018. And we'll go ahead and cavil that in. We're going to have, there are two things on the agenda that I think everyone saw. One is we're going to have an update on the paid family and medical leave work group. And then we're also going to talk about the earned income tax credit. I see that Mr. Alanek is already here. We're going to take that subject a second. You can wait, or I just want to be sensitive of your time. So we also have some other things I apparently need to cover here. Okay, so the paid family and medical leave work group continues to meet since January of this year, 2018. We've been meeting, going over a bunch of very, very difficult and intense topics. We've had nine meetings, going over all sorts of different policy issues. The work group includes members from the House and the Senate, and we have business, labor, state agencies, local governments, et cetera there. Representative Williamson, Senator Canope, Representative Leiby, Representative Bonham, and Representative Alonzo Leon and myself are all on that work group as well. And Deborah Marinoff, the staff here, happens to also be the staff person for that. So we are, at this point, we are diving into what the cost of, if we were to do paid family medical leave here in Oregon. We're now in the work group looking at what will be, what the cost would be, and of course that's driven by how much benefits we offer, et cetera, length of time, et cetera. And so Deborah is going to, it's going to be just a really brief overview of what we've been working on so far, and then members of the committee here, if you want to ask questions about what we've been doing in the work group, Senator Canope has been there, of course, all along. This would be a good time to ask questions about it, because we are planning, hopefully, to that there will be a bill in the next session. The bill, of course, has to start in the House, because it is does require a supermajority to start over in the House. So do you want to go ahead and give us an update of what's happened since we last met here for Ledge Days?
Sure. So since January, there have been three meetings. There was one in June, one in July, and one in September.
Since the last Ledge Days?
Since the last Ledge Days. There's been nine meetings total.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Three since the last Ledge Days committee meeting. So at the June meeting, there was a staff presentation and a work group discussion on claims processing, employee benefits, and employment protections. And we had been going through each of the meetings, different components of a paid family and medical leave program. So that was the sections that we were up to then. And then in July, we went over costs and financing of paid family and medical leave programs in other states. And then at the most recent meeting in September, we started looking in detail at the cost breakdowns and the different scenarios that not only the states that had paid family and medical leave programs implemented, but ones that have been considering those programs. They had looked at various scenarios for costs, and so we had an overview of a bunch of those. We had Jeff Hayes here, who is a researcher at the Institute for Women's Policy Research, which is a nonprofit organization in Washington, D.C., and they do paid family and medical leave cost simulations using census data and predictions on behavior based on family and medical leave federally. So the goal of that meeting was for the work group members to start thinking about what scenarios they would like to have a cost analysis for in Oregon. And so at the conclusion of that meeting, the different stakeholders made a plan to get together and come up with some different cost scenarios, and we've just received those of what they would like to see. And at the next meeting, we'll be looking at what those estimates will be. So the next meeting is in a couple weeks.
Okay. And then for more information, you want to go over where, just so that we have that on the record?
Yes. For more information, there is a website for the work group that is found through Representative Williamson's website. And if you go under her website in the left-hand column, there is a link for the work group. And all of the agendas and meeting summaries and documents that have been distributed to the work group are there. The materials for the most recent meeting are not there yet, but my understanding is they should be there very soon.
Okay. All right. Thank you. So the next meeting is October 22nd. We may be having a meeting on October 8th is where we're aiming to do that one as well. We want to have some additional meetings between now and the start of the 2019 session so that we make certain to have all the issues discussed and iron out things that need to be discussed. So committee members, again, it will start in the House, and then its exact path and how the Senate will be involved is, and we all know that. I don't get to decide all of that. But it's a good possibility that it would involve our committee, though. So does anybody have any questions or want more information? That's very brief, what we've been talking about. It's a very important piece of legislation, though, about paid family and medical leave. So if there's anything anybody wants answered at this point, it would be a good time to ask that of either me or Senator Knope or of Deborah here. Do you want to go over anything? All right. Okay. Yes, Senator Hansel.
I just have such complete confidence in the two of you. I don't have any questions.
You mean the three of us?
Well, the three of you, but yeah, mostly the third one, but
Deborah.
The other two I would throw in.
I know we have to really tell the real truth here, that we have Deborah here, who's she's done an amazing job of researching things and bringing information together for the group. So thank you. It's been an enormous amount of work, because this is definitely, it's not simple coming up with the policies for this. So stay tuned and have no fear either at the next legislative days in December, and of course when the session starts, there will be more meetings either here or in the on the House side about what the specifics are. And if anybody has questions that they want to let me know what they're thinking about this or anything, of course, you're always welcome to come by my office and to let me know if there's any feedback you would like me to have. So, all right, so now we're going to go ahead, and if there aren't any other questions, we'll go ahead and close this meeting on paid family and medical leave, and then we're going to open up an informational meeting on earned income tax credits. And first, we'll hear some background on the subject of earned income tax credits, and we're going to hear that from Chris, right?
Right.
Okay, so Mr. Alanek.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Chris Alanek, Legislative Revenue Office. I have, in OLIS, there is a two-page document that's kind of something we put together and used for several years. It's a 101 on the earned income tax credit. And so that has a series of bullet points with dates and numbers and a few charts to try and convey, at least at a very high level, what this tax credit is.
Mm-hmm.
And the federal earned income tax credit is a credit that's been in federal law since the mid-70s, and it was initially a refund of payroll taxes just implemented through the income tax system. And it has been modified over the years and is seen as an effective and efficient anti-poverty tool. The Oregon earned income tax credit is just a percentage of the federal credit. So all of the administration, all of the rules, all of the eligibility criteria and so forth is in federal law. And in calculating the Oregon credit, it's pretty straightforward. You figure out how the amount of the federal credit, and then the Oregon credit is a percentage of that amount. So the Oregon side is easy. The actual rules and qualifications at the federal level can be fairly complicated. And the amount of the credit varies depending on, there are basically kind of eight groups of taxpayers. You have single and married. And then depending on if you have no children, one child, two children, or three or more children, those are categories and determine how much of the tax credit you get. So in 2018, the maximum federal credit for filers with no children is $519, and then goes up to about $6,400 for taxpayers with three or more children. And some of the qualifications here are for a qualifying child that there has to be a certain relationship to the taxpayer, just kind of the usual ones, a son, daughter, stepson, stepdaughter, son-in-law. And the child has to reside with the taxpayer for at least half of the year, And then they have to be under the age of 19 or 24 if they're a college student. And the general structure of the tax credit is as earned income increases, the amount of the credit increases because it's a fixed percentage. And so, and that's what the charts show, an increasing credit. And then they plateau. That's the maximum tax credit the taxpayers can claim. And then it starts to phase down as taxpayers' income increases. Now, the federal credit and the Oregon credit are refundable tax credits. So what that means is as a taxpayer fills out their income tax return, even if the amount of their tax liability for that year is zero, they could potentially get a refund. So, for example, if somebody is due a $1,000 earned income tax credit and their tax liability prior to that is, say, $600, the credit first wipes out that tax liability, reduces it from $600 down to zero, and then they will get a check back for $400. So that's the key thing of the refundability portion there. And that's what enables it really to get at the lowest income taxpayers and really be characterized as an anti-poverty tool because of that refundability piece.
Can I ask one quick question? Is there any restriction by the federal government of how much the Oregon can take of that percentage? Is there a restriction on that?
No. Madam Chair, so on the back page is the Oregon tax credit.
Okay.
And the Oregon credit has been around since the mid-90s and was initially created as a 5% non-refundable tax credit. It has been increased over the years and is now a refundable credit, and the base credit is an 8% refundable tax credit. In 2016, though, we now have kind of a bifurcated tax credit where a taxpayer, if they have a child under the age of three, a qualifying child under the age of three, they can get an 11% tax credit. So that's why there are the two charts on the back here. And so the Oregon credit for 2018, the 8% credit ranges from a maximum of $42 for taxpayers with no children up to $514 for taxpayers with more than three children. And then the 11% credit ranges from $381 for one child. Again, you have to have a child, so if you're a single payer with no children, you don't get the 11% credit.
Mm-hmm.
But
yes, Senator Gelser.
Thank you. For the child under three, so once you have a child under three in the household, that just jumps you altogether into the 11% bracket. Not so if you're at that three level, not all three children have to be under the age of three.
Correct. You just need one child under the age of three.
Okay.
And then, so that's the main structure of the tax credit. It is scheduled to sunset in 2020 and is required to be part of the LRO tax credit report that will be presented to the legislature in 2019. So there'll be bills drafted to automatically or to extend the sunset 6 years. It's part of that regular tax credit review.
Okay. I'm sorry. So other states, what is the pattern in other states? Like, do you have any sense, or that may be off the cuff question? But
I think you're going to hear better testimony on that. But off the cuff, I think some states have a tax credit that might be 25 to 30% the federal credit. You know, somewhere from three to four times our tax credit.
Okay.
And our credit was most recently, we went from 6% to 8% with tax year 2014. So that's that most recent big change. And then, again, 2 years ago, just going to the 11% increase. And that, we haven't gotten return data on that. Those first show up with tax year 2017, which are being filed right now. So we don't have data yet on those tax credits.
Okay.
And then the last thing is the last chart on there is a cost to the general fund of the tax credit since 2007. And we're up at about, in 2016, it looks like it's cost around $46 million.
Okay.
And about, in terms of refundability, about 45% of that amount is a refundable portion. So it's split roughly half and half, where the total cost to the state is $46 million. About half of that reduces taxpayers' liability down to zero, and then the other half is refunded to them beyond their liability.
Okay. All right.
Madam Chair?
Senator Wilson.
So I was trying to see where in the graphs, and maybe you have them. So how many people are being reached? How many people use the earned income tax credit? And how much is that actually cost in millions of dollars?
So the Chair Taylor, Senator Ivana Sanderson, on the second page at the bottom chart, the last chart, it's a blue line. The number of taxpayers that are using the tax credit right now is around 285,000. That's grown from about 235,000 over the past 10 years. So we're just under 300,000 taxpayers claiming the tax credit. And in total, the state has about 2 million. We're close to about 2 million tax filers. And the total cost is about $46 million a year, so about, call it $90 million a biennium right now.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And then do you have a sense of where most of them fall within these income levels of the household income levels?
We are working on compiling that information. I don't have a sense right now.
Yeah, no, I was just curious because you have this range here for the eligibility. And I was just curious where most people fell. Isn't there a big problem with people not taking advantage of this? Not enough people recognizing that they have this option?
There has been some work out there. The IRS puts together some statistics on participation rates.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe some people have taken that information and expanded on that a little bit. And we are perhaps the lowest among participation rates.
Right, that's what I heard, yeah.
There's a lot of potential work that goes into estimating those participation rates and difference across the state. So there are efforts to highlight the visibility of the tax credit, but we're also looking at to see and explain and better understand why we might be so low. For example, with the earned income tax credit, there's generally a feeling that there's a lot of abuse or misuse of the tax credit. It can be fairly complicated for taxpayers to claim it. So in some sense, that I don't know if those kinds of factors are incorporated in the work that's done on the participation rates.
Why is it more complicated?
Taxpayers, well, for a while there, the IRS would even offer to calculate the tax credit. I mean, you're targeting lower income folks who might not have, they're not hiring CPAs to calculate the tax credit. And the residency requirements, and taxpayers also have to have SSNs to claim the tax credit. And so the instructions for getting through all of these pieces are a couple pages long in the IRS instruction book. So on the face of it, and I am describing it at a fairly high level, so on a conceptual level it's not that difficult, but you have all of these layers that seem to make it more complicated.
Okay. All right. Any other questions before we're going to go ahead and... Anyone? Other questions for Chris? And then we'll go ahead and... should we have Chris stay, or should we have him? You think he's good to go?
Good to go.
I think we're good to go.
Okay.
Go back to LFOing or LROing. Thank you for coming. So James Barta, and let's see, you had this all nicely laid out for me. What did I do with it? You want to have them all come up together, all four of them, or?
Yes.
Okay, James Barta, Gwen Williams, Sarah Adams, and Janet Bauer. It's only really, we'll add up four. Hello.
Hello.
Okay, are you going to kick us off here, James?
I will kick us off. Okay. My name is James Barta. I'm the Strategic Director for Children First for Oregon. And I want to start off thanking our now departed Chris Halanek. For the presentation, we're here for the advocacy portion of the EITC information, and one of the things I want to talk about, our panel is going to describe some of the examples and or some personal examples that they've seen, and then get into more technical detail. But I want to talk a little bit about a little more of the origins of EITC because they are quite bipartisan. It's one of the few anti-poverty programs that is truly supported by both sides of the aisle, in which I'm very happy to be up here to be able to talk about that. You know, it started in the 60s, and as things slowly happened in the federal government, it wasn't passed into law until 1975 in the Ford administration. You know, the original version was a 10% credit on the first $4,000 earned. So it had a limit of $400. But the limits and the eligibility criteria were expanded in the next six presidencies, you know, Carter, Reagan, up through Bush and Obama. And I did find this nice little quote from the Jack Kemp Foundation, an essay written by Speaker Paul Ryan and Senator Tim Scott. They describe it as, perhaps the greatest education of all occurs on the job. That's why many Republicans have called for, and then we list various initiatives, but including supporting low-income workers by increasing the earned income tax credit. That first job is the first rung on the ladder of opportunity. And that's part of the reason there's so much bipartisan support, is that it's encouraging people to work and work more. And it's something that has lifted thousands of Oregon children out of poverty and their families, and that's part of the reason I'm here to support it. And I just want to point out that while Chris Nalak gave the legislative history, in 1997, when Oregon created that our version of the tax credit at 5%, that was in 1997. Both chambers were controlled by Republicans, and in 2006, that's when the Oregon tax credit was made refundable, and it was, you know, Democrats had the Senate at that point, and Republicans had the House. But I have a couple other little points before I turn to my other panelists here. It's, you know, there's a couple different things, and it was already brought up by Chair Taylor, that we have concerns about participation. You know, Oregon has a low participation rate, and I know this committee, in fact, has worked on a bill in 2017, passed unanimously Senate Bill 398 to include written notices in to employees from employers to encourage people to participate in the ITC. And in 2015, of course, we did that expansion where it included, it raised the Oregon credit from 8% to 11% for families that have children under three. But we don't know the effects of those right now. There's a three-year delay before we know how many people participate and how much are participating in EITC. So while we wait for that, though, we're here to discuss the importance of not only renewing this program, but expanding it to help working families. So this we're here in front of the Workforce Committee because, like I've mentioned, this is about working families, people who are doing those low-paying jobs that make our society function but are having trouble making ends meet. And this is fundamentally a workforce issue. It's a children's issue. It's a family issue. And we're looking forward to further discussions as we get ready for session.
Okay, thank you, James. Can you tell me, I'm looking through, what are you proposing? What would you like to see?
Well, at the very least, we're asking for the renewal. And we are hoping that as an expansion, I'm not ready to give you a number at this time. Okay. But we're hoping to expand this program.
Okay. Okay, who is next?
Hi, Chair Taylor, members of the committee. I am Gwen Williams. I have been a tax aid volunteer now for almost 20 years. The tax aid program is run by and administered by AARP Foundation and the IRS. My husband and I supervise, and we have supervised for the past 14 years, a tax site at George Fox University in Newburgh, and this is a free income tax assistance site. The AARP Foundation tax aid program is especially focused on taxpayers who are 50 or older and are of low to moderate income or simply can't afford to pay for paid tax preparation. And I'd like to talk about the importance of the earned income tax credit for this demographic, for those taxpayers who are low and moderate income and who are 50 years of age and older. One of the realities of our society right now is that we have many grandparents who are raising grandchildren. This is a job they didn't anticipate. This is a job that they pretty much did not financially plan for. We see a lot of grandparents at our tax aid sites who have not, who don't have the resources, adequate resources, to take care of those children. They're low or moderate income taxpayers. Receiving the earned income tax credit can make a difference in their lives, and it does make a difference. It can help provide the basic needs of housing, shelter, transportation, paying for those athletic fees that we all know continue to rise every year so that their kids can participate in sports or their grandchildren. EITC is helping with this, but we can do better. Secondly, some of our older taxpayers are still taking care of their adult children with special needs. Let me share an example with you. Several years ago, we had an older couple come into our tax site and to get assistance with their tax return. They didn't mention to us that they had anyone else living in their home other than the two of them, and they were what I would consider a low-income family. While I was quality reviewing their tax return, and at this point they had a refund of approximately $200, the wife mentioned to me in passing that their adult son, who was permanently and totally disabled, lived with them. And I can tell you bells went off in my head, because I immediately knew that this was a qualifying family for earned income tax credit. We sat down, we redid the tax return, and put their adult disabled son on the return as a qualifying person. The refund went from under $200 to $1,900 and something. And by this time, we were all in tears as we were giving what was incredible news for this couple. Since the husband had always done their tax returns in the past and was unaware of the earned income tax credit, we amended 3 years past returns to get earned income tax credit. And by this, I get emotional. By the time we were done, they had over $5,000 in refunds. This is a family whose AGI was about $10,000 that year. Can you imagine the difference that made in their lives? And it was earned income tax credit. As we were all sitting there with tears running down our faces, the wife mentioned that this had been an extremely difficult year for them, and this was a life-changing moment for this family. EITC made a difference, but we can do better. Lastly, I have a 52-year-old brother. My brother is developmentally disabled. Phil's main source of income is Supplemental Security Income, and I don't know if you're aware of how low that is, but that's a very low amount that he lives on. Every now and then, he is able to get a job, working at a menial job of some sort, and earn a little bit of extra income. He never comes close to exceeding the income limits to receive earned income tax credit. But when that refund comes in February, because he's one of the first tax returns I do for the year, Phil is able to go down to the utility company, and he's able to pay off the amount of electricity that he has accumulated on his bill over the course of the winter that he couldn't pay for out of his supplemental security income and his few hours of working. EIC makes a difference for Phil. It may sound like a small amount of money, but it makes a difference. But I know that we can do better. Our rate is, what'd you say, 8% right now, unless you have children under age 3, in which case it goes to 11. We need to raise the rate of earned income tax credit for our vulnerable populations. These are people who are doing their very best. They're working, and they need any and all help that we can possibly give them. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
I have a question. Yes, Senator Ronna
Simpson. Every state has earned income tax credit then, no?
That I don't know, but I don't believe so.
Oh, okay.
Well, let's back up. Every state had on the federal return, yes, has earned income tax credit. Not necessarily a state component.
Gotcha. Okay, thank you.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. So are you Sarah?
I am.
Okay. Sarah Adams, why don't you go ahead?
Good afternoon, Chair, Senators. I'm Sarah Adams, Executive Director at CASH Oregon, where each year we recruit about 500 individuals and train them to prepare tax returns at no cost at any of 50 different tax sites throughout the metro area. The reason we do this for free is specifically to maximize the impact of the earned income tax credit. Our mission at CASH Oregon is to improve the financial health of lower-income working Oregonians and families. And we care about the earned income tax credit because it can and does do just that. The vast majority of EITC claims go to adults with children in the home. It can be worth over $6,000, as you heard earlier from our previous speaker. And it frequently represents 30% or more of a recipient's income. There were two stories this year that I wanted to share with you, as I felt they really do a great job of demonstrating the impact that the earned income tax credit can have on families and why we do this. The first story was from Enrique, who stated that with his refund, he was going to take his daughter to see a doctor. This was something that had been currently unavailable to them just due to lack of resources. And not only does this demonstrate, or rather reveal, how one's socioeconomic status is directly how one's socioeconomic status is a social determinant of health, but also how the EITC can have a positive impact on families and in particular children's health. The second story I'd like to share comes from Esteban, who planned to use his refund to pay some debts and then to open an eBay store. And he had a very clear plan that then within a few years he would be able to start an apparel store. And in his words, to grow my inventory as my income grows, because I need to spend money to make money. Esteban's story really shows how investing in individuals with refundable tax credits like the EITC can change one's financial trajectory for the long term and really allow someone to get ahead. So I hope that you will stand with us to renew and raise the Oregon earned income credit so that we can see more stories like Esteban's and Enrique's. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. All right, we'll go ahead and move on to Janet Bauer, I assume?
Yes. Good afternoon, Chair Taylor and members of the committee. My name is Janet Bauer, and I'm a policy analyst with the Oregon Center for Public Policy. My role here on this panel is to provide information about what we know about how families are doing and the role of the earned income tax credit and you'll see complements the stories that we've heard today. as others have mentioned, there's longstanding research that shows that the earned income tax credit lifts people out of poverty. and in specific, in Oregon, combined with the federal child tax credit, about 130,000 Oregonians would be in poverty except for those credits. We don't have information that disaggregates both of them. But that number also includes 65,000 children. It's a powerful tool. There's more recent research that shows that there's long-term impacts of the earned income tax credit. Specifically, households where women are receiving the credit have higher maternal health, and their children are healthier when they're born. In addition, children in households that are receiving the credit compared to those similarly situated households that don't, do better in school. They have higher educational attainment. And they also end up earning more as adults, unsurprisingly. It's simply the power of improving economic status at critical times in a person's life. Oregon has taken great steps recently to raise the wage that our lowest income workers are working at, and undoubtedly families who are working at minimum wage are benefiting by those increases. My recent analysis of household budgets, however, shows that even despite those increases, households with children who are working at minimum wage are struggling to make ends meet in every part of the state. Specifically in Portland, in the Portland area, a household costs exceed the earnings from full-time minimum wage work by hundreds of dollars a month. And even for households in rural areas, their expenses exceed earnings at full-time, even considering receipt of SNAP benefits, that's the food stamp program, receiving SNAP, receiving the federal earned income tax credit, receiving our working household, family household, and dependent care credit, and including any benefits from the recently passed tax bill in Congress. So I accounted for all of those benefits and found that even with those, rural households working at minimum wage with children were not able, are not earning enough to make ends meet on their own. As we've been talking about, the states have utilized the structure of the federal credit to provide resources to just the households that we've been talking about. And it's very effective because it's very targeted to exactly the group of workers that we're referring to. It can be a game changer if the state EITCs are sufficient. Compared to other states, though, Oregon's rate is relatively meager. And the next slide, shows this is a list of the states that have refundable credits. That's the 23 states. And Oregon's at its base rate of 8% is one of the lowest. So most states are utilizing their EITC much more effectively in helping families make ends meet. So I'll go ahead and conclude and say that although our economy is booming, and we've raised our minimum wage, many families throughout the state are still struggling to make ends meet on low wages. So we would urge you to renew the earned income tax credit and make a substantial boost to it when we consider this topic in the next session. Thank you very, very much for holding this hearing, and happy to take questions.
Yes, Senator Monson.
I have a lot of very poor seniors in my district, and one lady explained that she was a federal employee, so she doesn't get Social Security. She gets something through, I forget how that works, but they get a pension instead of some. So her income was $1,200 a month, strictly from that. That's all she has. So would she be eligible for the income tax credit, even though it's a retirement? No, she has to work, has to be working.
And have children that are
No,
childs?
You don't have to have children.
No children?
Chair Taylor and members of the committee, the federal and the state credit are available to households with or without children.
Okay.
The extra credit that Oregon provides, that extra 3% on top of the 8, is available only for households with children under 3.
Okay.
There, and Chair Taylor,
yes.
I believe Chris Allen-Ack's two-pager has a good description of it.
Yeah, I see it here now.
Yeah, yeah. There's a much lower rate for people without children who are working.
Sure. Yeah. The and so can anyone? I'm just curious why what is this, a little less than half the states, fewer than half the, why don't this range, I mean, California is at 85%. That's,
you know, jeez.
Right.
No wonder they're bankrupt.
Is that in order to motivate people to take it? Is that, what's the?
I think I can speak to what I understand the thinking it is in California. There are footnotes here.
Yeah, that's awfully
small print. And I'm not expecting that you could read those right this second, but what I want to explain is that California's earned income tax credit is targeted to taxpayers whose earnings are below about $22,000 a year, and that's about half of what the federal does. So they're investing all of their bang for the buck in this, in the lowest earning households and giving them a substantial bump.
Okay, yeah, it says California's EITC is available only to workers with income less than $22,300. And then it kind of goes through some of the other states. And then what you just talked about with Oregon is another one of the footnotes. I'm just curious why some of the states are not doing this at all. Do they have some other mechanism?
Some of them are considering it. It has been progressively more and more states are adding it. Mm-hmm. And I believe that there's efforts in many states, even those who don't currently have them, to institute them.
And then the participation, yeah, we don't have the chart showing because we have the lowest utilization. I'm just wondering if the percentage and if any of these targets have driven up participation. I don't know. I don't
from
know if anyone
what
knows
I,
that. Maybe OCPP has that, or maybe the Department of Revenue, I mean LRO has that.
Mm. Yeah, I'm from the Oregon Center for Public Policy, and we do track participation rate. It is my understanding that the higher the rate, the higher the participation when you get above 10%. So you have to get above a critical level before you start basically seeing some impact on take-up. But there are many ways to increase the mm-hmm. participation rate.
So when we say we have the lowest participation rate, it's just for the states that offer it?
Yes.
Yeah, so it's, okay.
Well, that would be for the federal credit. All states have the federal credit
right.
available.
Yeah. But
yes.
for the, yeah.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Any other questions? I know that James was telling me that this is something that Children First, I'll let you speak, that this is one of your priorities for the next session, correct?
Well, Chair Taylor, I can't speak to our priorities yet since we haven't developed, but it will certainly be on our children's agenda.
Children's agenda, yeah. Okay. Well, it seems like it's been effective, tweaking it and making some changes so that people use it more mm-hmm. and whatever improvements need to happen in order to achieve the goal that it's set out to achieve makes sense. So,
yes.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you
thank
very
you.
Much.
Thank you.
So, see, committee members, when I said it was going to be short and sweet, short.
You speak truth.
Yes. So we're going to go ahead and close the informational hearing on earned income tax credit, and then we can conclude, unless there's anything else for the good of the order, we'll go ahead and conclude the meeting, Senate Interim Workforce Committee.